Welcome to Starter Pack by Beaver Sound.
I'm Maisie Adair. Barley Birchley is the newly elected education officer for the Student Union. Barley is passionate about representation and creating an accessible learning environment at LSE. This conversation reflects that as we discuss the culture students find themselves in when they begin studying at LSE.
You are now the new education officer with the Student Union. What made you want to take that role?
So I did my master's at LSE in political sociology. I actually did my undergrad in education at Cambridge. And I guess like I did 3 years of education. I was like, if I'm qualified to do any role in the Student Union, I feel like education is probably where it's at. Mm-hmm. And I think like I've cared a lot about it. Obviously did a degree in it. But even throughout the year, I think like I didn't really involve myself with the SU, I think in part because I saw it as quite like an undergrad focused area. Mm-hmm. And I think it still can be. And I think in terms of even how elections run, it's really difficult as a postgrad to be elected. Just because there's such a separation between postgrad and undergrad world, and social circles and all of that kind of thing. And it's such a massive university that you kind of, it's difficult to know people even beyond your course, never mind beyond your kind of year group cohort. Mm. And quite honestly, I was looking at jobs in other places and I was like, I don't really like any of these. Mm. And I looked at the education, like what you do as education officer. And I was like, I want to do all of these things. I care passionately about representing people, about like, particularly when it comes to education and inequalities. I think as a student who's like, I'm trans, because I'm non-binary, trans mask, maybe, who knows? So you'll hear my voice drop throughout this year as I go on testosterone. This is going to be fun. Wait for my weird puberty.
We can do another podcast at the end.
yeah, we can compare. I haven't come from like a well-off background at all. Just generally queer as a person. Bi, trans, not a well-off background. I have ADHD. There was a lot in terms of educational access and representation. I'm also, the first out trans sabbatical officer that the LSU's had.
Right.
And,
yeah.
That kind of being able to bring to the fore those issues that are very personal to me, as well as, issues that I've had friends who've experienced throughout the year, in terms of institutional and systemic racism. I saw a lot of issues within education and I was like, I want to try and fix those. Which maybe is quite ambitious, but at least I can make a start,
Yeah, definitely.
I just think I'm thinking about going into academia myself, and I think it's a really difficult area to go into. Mm. And when it comes to undergrad and postgrad, when you're able to study things where you feel represented and you really care about them, just like in terms of mental well-being and in terms of just like general interest and value and knowledge that you get out of that, you just get so much more than when you are doing something that you don't really connect with that much. And maybe you sense that like there are things that are missing. Yeah, I'm here for all of that.
I was really keen to do this episode and talk to an education officer and about education. When I came to LSE, I hadn't written an essay in about 3 years because I'd taken years out and worked and other things. It is quite intimidating. I was definitely very scared. Like, I didn't know what an abstract was. I thought it was computer generated, just random words. I never even thought to read it.
I think when it comes to academics, because they've been so immersed in it for so long, they don't know what might trip people up and what might not. Different things trip people up. Yeah, the thing about abstract. Mostly the issue I found, at least, was just feeling like all of my difficulties were abnormal. Mm-hmm. And it is a different mode of reading. And it will be for each individual person, you know, like if it sometimes it will take you half an hour to read an entire paper, and sometimes it will take you like a week, and mm-hmm. they're the same length and the same difficulty. It's just like, I think, mm-hmm. is what I've kind of accepted after like 4 years of study. I'm like, maybe it's just like that sometimes. And I think particularly having had ADHD and doing this kind of thing, my attention span is like out of whack all of the time. It's like, yes, I've read a sentence and that's it for today. Some days it's like, I could read all day. I'm the master of reading. Kind of relax on it. Get support from like LSE Life or academic mentors or whatever. Mm-hmm. They are, you know, like you don't have to read an article like through in the same way that you do with like a novel. Read the conclusion first, or you know, you read the abstract, you read the conclusion. Read the introduction, maybe you read the middle bit, maybe you don't.
And now I know what an abstract is. Read the abstract too. Yeah.
Yes, which an abstract is basically the blurb on the back of a book that anyone who is listening and like tends to tell you the things you need to know. Also, that not all things you read are written well.
Yeah.
Just because you find it difficult to read doesn't mean that it's because they are like so high up in the levels of academia that they write with such beautiful and efficient prose that you are a mere mortal don't know how to read it. No, like sometimes they just write badly. Don't always assume that you're at fault. Yeah, and don't believe everything you read.
Yeah. Yeah. There's one thing that this year has maybe taught us. It might be that. I think we're done with learning.
The major thing is finding people to talk to about these kind of things outside of the classroom, even if it is over Zoom.
Where can students go to get the support they need for doing their first readings, writing their first essays, all the basic kind of boring but hopefully not boring information?
The like LSE Life, which kind of offers some online resources as well as like workshops and one-to-one sessions. But I'd say aside from that, just like make sure that you talk to other students, and if you feel comfortable, talk to kind of course lead and your academic mentor. Yeah, and for any students with disabilities, including kind of mental health issues and specific learning difficulties, then go to the Disability and Wellbeing Service, and they might have more specific things that can help you as well.
And I think it's worth saying, isn't it, that if you don't know, like you don't have a particular diagnosis, but there might be something that you need specific help with, just go and get some help. You're paying first few times. Definitely. You know, you're gonna write a bad essay, you're not gonna know how to read for a bit, or maybe you will and it'll be really easy, but honestly everyone's in the same position. There's no disability officer this year.
Yes.
Because normally, you know, you're an education officer. To anyone who doesn't know, we have officers in the student union who represent specific areas that might need addressing in the university. And there isn't a disability officer this year. So what help and specific support is available for students who have specific learning difficulties, and more broadly, students who might need specific access needs? Where can they go for help?
So, I mean, obviously, as I just mentioned, the first port of call is generally the Disability and Wellbeing Service. And that's both if you kind of know what you've got going on, and if you don't, because I have ADHD. I didn't have any diagnosis until my third year of uni. So it's kind of never too late. So not just for even kind of incoming students, but for continuing students as well. Yeah. Just like it's never too late to be like, maybe something's up, just check it out. And basically when you go there, they will help formulate some kind of inclusion plan, which will be sent around to the teaching staff that you have lessons with. And they will be like, this is what this person needs. I think sometimes when that happens, it can often rely on you telling them what you need. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't know what they need. If you feel like you don't know and you're kind of just making things up, ask them, you know, what have people had before had similar things to me, and ask them to find out what other universities are doing even, and make sure that basically not all of that burden is on you as an individual student, because they are also the experts, so they will know these things. They're just trying to give you the space to say what works for you. The student union has its own advice service, so you can come to us as well and talk to one of our our advisors. Aside from that, if you're thinking about running, we will be we will have a Michaelmas term election. So this coming term, this first term, we will be trying to elect a disability officer. So if you're thinking about it, come talk to us, and please do run. I think we probably need to be more flexible in the role. So that's something we'll be talking about, you know, whether we can try and run it as a shared position or as a more network-based position, and be really aware of the fact that, you know, particularly for students with disabilities, it can be more challenging to be taking on a big role alongside your work, and that can seem quite scary. For sure, come and talk to us and we'll see kind of how we can make the post itself more accessible.
That would be really reassuring for a lot of people and a possible option for them. In that vein, university culture tends to be classified as quite forward thinking. You know, typically students are considered some of the most progressive people when it comes to social issues in society. Would you say that the learning environment at LSE reflects that?
So this is an interesting one. And in terms of the officers, I'm probably the least well placed to answer this. I spent maybe 4 months on campus. I did a master's at LSE, so I didn't spend my undergrad at LSE. There's a lot of institutional work still to be done. And as a union, we've kind of and particularly like the other, myself and the other sabbatical officers are looking at creating more resources for students who maybe don't have the same background in some of these social issues so that they don't feel kind of left behind in these conversations. It really just depends, you know, there isn't really a monolith, just really depends who you end up being friends with, I think. But there are a lot of teachers and students who are quite, I guess, progressive and in their approaches to social issues, but there can be it can be at times inflexible, which is, you know, what we need you to tell us about, because we don't necessarily know all of those times, and so that kind of ensuring that we hear any issues that are being had on campus, whether it's with kind of an interstudent issue or an institutional issue or just an individual teacher, please let us know.
What do you think is the correct way to change the things that you think need to be changed?
Yeah, I mean, this has been my whole summer since I was elected. I think I've kind of decolonization, diversification and anti-racism is like probably one of my three major areas to focus on this year. I think what I've found so far is that there isn't an established path for these things. What makes it especially difficult is the fact that you have the central school body and then the departments themselves have quite a lot of autonomy, basically, in what they can and can't, they can decide to do and what they do and don't want to do. So when it comes to attempting bigger structural changes or institutional changes, or even just cultural changes, there's only so much you can do in going to the school itself in the sense of kind of this central body and attempting some kind of department-wide. I think these kind of more activist, student-led and staff-led, because there are a lot of staff who really want to see these changes and are kind of struggling and dealing with an academic world which is often, you know, Eurocentric, white-centric, cis-heteronormative, you know, so like who are really struggling with this. And I think that making those kind of partnerships between staff and students who are on a similar wavelength and trying to create cultural changes within the departments itself where we say, you know, actually, that's not what you're doing isn't good enough, you know. I think part of my focus for this year is trying to create some resources that students can look at to help think through, I suppose, like if I've got a course, how do I start to even think about this course in terms of what's missing, you know? I think often academic disciplines are presented as this kind of full picture, and it takes a lot to then be like, oh, well, actually, how do I start to think about how these other things fit in? I know that this isn't the complete picture. History and the disciplines have been so whitewashed and washed of the history of oppressed people in effect, you know, that it can be quite difficult to work out.
What support should students seek if they feel as though a teacher, a professor, or anyone in faculty really isn't acting in a way they possibly should. Maybe they're not teaching to the standard that you'd like them to, or you feel like your learning ability is being compromised, or possibly more seriously, you feel as though your well-being is being really affected by a certain staff member's actions. Who should you go to? What should you do?
Three main areas, either through your academic rep, through the kind of the SU going through the advice service, or through kind of department areas such as your academic mentor or your course
administrator.
If you really aren't sure, then I would say come to the SU and talk to one of our advice staff, because they'll be able to signpost you to the kind of the best way to go about it for the specific instance.
If you do need help, the help will be there, and you won't be the first student who's had an issue with a member of staff. And you know, we're all human, so maybe it's just personality thing, but yeah, there is help there if you need it, and it doesn't need to be big massive help. It can just be some maybe words of advice. This is probably the hardest question. So LSE was one of the few Russell Group universities that didn't safeguard students' grades with the, is it a no detriment policy? I could write it, but I never actually knew. But it was a real concern for a lot of students. And the previous education officer was someone who sort of led this campaign against LSE's decision and really criticised what they were doing. Can you sort of share any ease anxiety for students who are worried about how we handle exams this year, results, gradings, when we're in this very difficult, uneasy time, and you know, restrictions could get stricter potentially?
One aspect that's kind of really good in terms of our sabbatical team, so David obviously is continuing from last year, he's now the general secretary. The other three of us all did exams this summer, like during lockdown, and kind of experienced that. So I think, you know, just to like reassure that we have been through it, and you know, it's something that we all feel quite strongly about. So we're very much kind of on it when it comes to examinations and grading and all of that kind of thing. The school have been doing a lot of planning. They've pretty much over, since before the last exams started, had daily meetings planning what assessments are going to look like over the next kind of year, and they're kind of thinking beyond that even. Just because we don't really know what's going to happen. And we've been invited into some of those meetings and have kind of made our voices heard, should we say. And I would say that, so we know that January assessments are going to be online for sure. And it's kind of coming into discussion now exactly what those assessments are going to look like, and how that's going to work, and if it's going to be particularly different from how it worked over the last summer period. And I think those discussions will probably be finalised within the next few weeks, and we'll be able to, you know, we will know what those exams will look like. I think the major point from this is basically like, we want to ensure that there's more transparency earlier. Obviously with the last exam set, it was kind of all quite quick. They had to adapt quite quickly, but there's a lot more time this time. They've known this was coming. And so ensuring that students know sooner rather than later how their exams are going to look, it's a big priority for us. And ensuring then that basically student views are heard on those examination formats to make sure that inclusion plans still hold relevance in these new exam formats, rather than it just being like, oh, well, you've got longer. So involved in that planning and making sure that basically like it's we can have as much voice on your behalf as possible.
Just for anyone who doesn't know, inclusion plans, they might include extra time. And this year, because in some cases you had a few days or even a week to do an exam, that was considered to factor in your extra time, which was possibly a little bit of an oversight for some students to have to deal with.
Yeah, and we've definitely kind of brought up continuously, you know, how this affects students who are neurodiverse or have, you know, don't have silent study spaces at home and all of that kind of thing. So, yeah, it's definitely something we'll keep an eye on, but there is also some like really remarkable practice, I think, from departments that's going to come out over this year in terms of kind of equality and diversity and inclusion plans.
Yeah. I'm hoping this is more of a sweet question to end on, kind of framed in the gloomy time, but we just witnessed lots of potential university students who are getting their A-level results not be able to get into university because of the grades they got, being refused, and possibly then after that a university has refused them, being given better grades. It's all been a bit chaotic for young people. It's been very stressful. Certainly, that's the impression I've been given. So what do you think can be done by LSE and also by LSE students to support potential students who wanted to come here or who are doing their exams now and do want to come here? What can we do?
So I think the first thing I'd say is, I think it was maybe, so LSE ended up taking on a lot more students than normal due to the exam related, I think the only word to describe it is kerfuffle.
Yeah,
you don't know what it means. It's just like mess, basically.
Yeah.
So I think it was 400 maybe more students taken on by LSE than usual, which is actually pretty amazing, you know. We've actually seen in LSE, maybe not in all universities, but like students, more students joining LSE than would have joined LSE in a normal exam year, due to, you know, the way that the U-turn worked and in terms of the government then being like, actually, you can have what your teacher said that you were going to have, etc. And I think what I'm really hoping is that it opens up more of a dialogue around testing and the fact that, you know, actually, not only is it kind of, has it been unfair over the last year in terms of A-level results, and will it be unfair for the next year in terms of students who are going to have kind of reduced and very disparate experiences in terms of teaching over the year. You know, it's not just the exams, it's also teaching experience. And I think ensuring from LSE's point of view, we need to ensure that students feel the most supported when maybe they haven't had the most supported year before that, if you know what I mean. So when they come in, that they don't feel completely lost and like, you know, they haven't done enough academic stuff over the last year because it's been all over the place. And that there'll be really different experiences in that. But also beyond that, to think that, you know, like the way that the A-level results originally turned out wasn't fair, but also like we put a lot of faith then in A-levels themselves being fair. And being some like a good testing measure for intelligence or aptitude or whatever words you want to put in there, for basically like how well you would then go on to do at LSE in terms of like learning and all of that kind of thing. Once again, the measurement of these things is always an issue. And actually, like, A-levels maybe aren't the best way to judge this information. And so we need to think more in terms of like exceptional circumstances for what grades you got in A-level and contextual offers. Maybe I particularly don't like A-levels, but I think as a mode of testing, I don't think they necessarily represent people that well. And I think we need to think a little bit more radically about how we consider how we gatekeep access to prestigious institutions. And then obviously a part of that will be widening participation and ensuring that despite kind of COVID regulations, etc., that we are still able to do outreach to schools and kind of let them know that things, I don't know, that LSE is an accessible place and that there are a lot of students who don't come from rich backgrounds, because I think LSE particularly suffers from a reputation of being quite inaccessible, I suppose. Socially and culturally, perhaps, I was going to say posh.
Yeah, the simplest way.
Which I think definitely I had before coming here, and then I was like,
Yeah, it is actually, I think the fact that it's such an international university, like you meet people who've just had all different backgrounds to you, and no one's story is the same. And I think that, yeah, I'm so grateful that I went to university that is like that, actually. But again, I do think there are lingering issues to do with class, to do with the culture and what is the norm. And it is isolating sometimes, you know. You do feel that. I remember my first few weeks, I thought, how did I get in here? I shouldn't be here. This was a mistake. But you are meant to be here. You really are.
Yeah.
I think that's the main takeaway, is that you got in and you're meant to be here. And also, some people didn't get in this year.
Yeah.
Who possibly really did deserve to get in, actually. And hopefully we have a nice enough student body that if you ever come across those people, you're nice and supportive, and maybe in another year they do come, which is my hope.
I guess it's not taking quite such a fixed view of things in terms of like what's meant to be and all of that kind of thing. Like whether you did or didn't get into LSE, or whether you're coming this year or next year or never, like it's just a different path that your life can take.
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily mean anything for your life prospects.
No.
Like, you can be happy and well-adjusted and successful regardless of whether you go to LSE or not.
Yeah.
And maybe you will someday. Maybe you'll come here for a master's like I did.
Yeah,
like,
maybe you'll get invited back to speak.
Yeah, exactly.
And you'll walk in and think, well, you didn't have me then, but you have me now.
Yeah.
Thanks to Bali for all their great advice. The music is from Anybody, spelt with two Y's, who you can find on Spotify. This has been Starter Pack, presented by Maisie Adair. Follow the series at Beaver Sound on Spotify.